What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to the Rockcast. Jordan Bed here on the microphone, and thanks for tuning in to another episode of Tipsy Tuesday. I've got some kind of cool stuff coming up. Real quick, just kind of what's going on here. We're guiding a mule deer hunter, and we actually tagged out on the first morning, which is always good. After it ended up being about a 6-hour stalk from the time we saw him to the time we got him shot, and kind of three different beds, following him to three different beds. We had one mishap. So I guess quick rundown on that. It's kind of cool. Scott got here on Sunday, and he is Scott's a Rock Slide member, pretty sure. And he's hunted with us before, and so he rolled in on Sunday night, and we're after mule deer. And so we went and scouted Sunday night, didn't quite see the deer that we wanted to. The next morning we got up, which would have been yesterday morning, and didn't get on the deer that we wanted to either. Found a bunch of does, but didn't find the bucks that I thought we were going to. And on our way back, kind of going to hunt our way out of that place, I guess, a new lease, and head back over to some other areas that we've seen mule deer. And we glassed up a bedded buck. There's actually two of them. He was a fairly old deer. Well, at first I couldn't really tell because it was really far away. So we ended up going back to the vehicle and driving a little closer and getting a little bit better look at him. But he's a big 3x3. He's a mature deer. He's a 4-year-old deer. But just a 3x3, had some pretty decent bases, but just a lot of those. You know, his bases weren't smooth. There's a lot of little prickly things coming out of them. And a really tall buck, not too wide, decently wide, I guess, but pretty tall. And just a big 3x3 with kind of crabby fronts. So where he was bedded, we had to crawl a little ways on our stomachs, which isn't that fun after a while. We got to 95 yards of him bedded. He had no idea we were there. He ended up standing up and walking down. He basically, from our point of view, he walked over the hill. But what he did was he just walked into a washout. Here in the sand hills, we have, like, you know, the water running just washes the sand out pretty fast. So there's like a little sand washout gully thing. And so we followed him over there, basically just walked over the hill and, you know, just walk a couple steps and glass and try to look for those antler tips. Finally, I caught his antler tips. I couldn't tell if he was looking our direction or not, but I just quickly ranged a soapweed behind him, and it was 48 yards, I think. So we walked pretty much right up on him. And as we were kind of standing there, debating exactly what we were going to do, trying to really figure out if he was bedded or standing, I was pretty sure he was bedded. The smaller buck he was with walked out below him. We could just see the top of his back and he was feeding, but I knew, you know, if he flung his head up, he was probably going to see us because we would have been skylined from his point of view. So I had the bright idea of throwing something and hopefully he would stand up and then Scott could shoot him. And I think it would have worked out better than it did if the smaller buck wouldn't have seen us first. I had Scott draw. And so he was at full draw, and I went to throw actually a rangefinder. I was just going to chuck a rangefinder over. And the smaller deer saw us about and blew about the time I threw the rangefinder. So the two together didn't really work out so good, and the bigger buck bolted out of his bed and didn't give us any time for a shot, but they were also running straight away from us. So we knew they were probably going to stop and maybe try to circle downwind and stop and look at us. So we just ran down into the little gully that they were in to get out of sight and gave them a little bit and then snuck up on the hill. They were gone from where they had been I'm pretty sure where they stopped and stood. So we left our backpacks probably 250 yards or so up the hill. So and over a little hill too. So I just kept a hill in between us and then where those bucks went, just in case they were still over there. We kind of circled back around to our backpacks and we came up over a little rise, and there are our backpacks underneath of us where we left them. And then on the opposite hillside, there's those two deer bedded again. And the way they bedded this time was a little bit better for stalking opportunity. The first time, like his very first bed when we snuck up to him, we could only get to 95 yards because he was bedded with his back protected, but then the wind was also coming at from his back instead of into his face like they like it a little bit. It was a pretty cold morning. I think he was just kind of, you know, perched up on a higher point trying to get some sun. So yeah, this time they bedded with the wind in their face and their back protected. So we made the trek around and we actually got within, we were at 30 yards for over an hour for sure. And, you know, at this point we'd been on them for about 5.5 hours. And so we kind of wanted to make something happen. And instead of waiting for him to stand up, we decided, I told Scott to draw. I actually got, I would say maybe 20 yards off to 10, 15 yards maybe off to, ended up being kind of right behind the deer. And I had Scott draw. And when he was at full draw, I cow called. I had my elk call in my pocket, just my diaphragm call. And I threw it in and then I put my hands over my mouth to kind of dole it down as much as I could. And I just cow called a couple times and the big buck stood up and Scott smoked him. Kind of went in, he was quartering just a tick towards him, and it kind of went in his brisket area, and it went through the off shoulder, but it actually didn't punch through the hide on the off side, but he was using a sever broadhead, and it opened that deer up. I was really impressed with kind of the hole in the blood trail we had to follow with that broadhead. It was impressive, I guess. So yeah, we got that done, and actually that was Scott's first buck deer that he shot. I didn't know that until, you know, after he shot him, he said, you know, that's my first buck. And I'm like, cool, first mule deer buck. And he said, no, first buck ever of anything. So super excited. He was ecstatic. He doesn't talk too much, but yeah, he was shaking and super excited, and I couldn't have been more thrilled with it either. That deer went about 125 yards, and he died right there. So it was super, super fun. So we got him out on antelope hunts right now. And then last night we actually glassed up a good, pretty good for here, 4x4 mule deer buck. We're going to try to get Jordan on this evening. Typically we don't have big 4x4 mule deer consistently anyways. And we're done with mule deer hunters for the year. So we're going to try to get Jordan on that one. So that's basically what's happening there. But I have been getting a lot of questions, and I'm just going to throw it out there real quick. We do run an outfitting business in Northwest Nebraska. It's just a small guiding business on private land. And so we do whitetail, mule deer, and antelope. We also do some predator hunts if you're interested in that. But yeah, whitetail, antelope, mule deer. Nebraska is all over the counter, except for their rifle tags. We actually don't run rifle hunts during deer season. Nebraska's rifle season is 9 days, and it's right during the rut. And I hate it, basically, and it's just it's a disaster, basically. Like that's when most people hunt is during rifle season, which obviously nothing wrong with that, but it's just kind of it's a shit show in Nebraska, I would say. So we just don't run any hunts at all. We just kind of stay out of the areas for those the 9 days that it goes on, and just kind of watch things ourselves. And so that's basically what we do. So we run archery hunts and muzzleloader hunts. So if you're interested in any of that, the seasons are pretty long. It's a fun hunt. One thing with the whitetail here, they're a lot more visible than other places, I guess. So like we can do spot and stalk ambush style hunting for whitetails, even with archery equipment. And it's really fun. And we see a lot of deer every day. We're typically into deer all the time. So I've been getting a few questions on that, just kind of asking what we offer. So that's basically what we offer. All the hunts are now guided. We kind of got away from semi-guided. We live on the ranch now, so we were basically doing all the hunts the same. So the guided will get you, obviously the infield transportation, all the stands and blinds and everything are taken care of. We try to keep really good stands. I know when I filmed some whitetail hunts a lot, I hated going places that just had really bad stands, especially when you're paying money for it. So we try to keep really comfortable and sturdy stands up. All of them have lifelines for like your safety harnesses. And then lodging, meals, like the infield transportation, like I said, and some of the meat care, you know, we'll help you with the meat care stuff too. So it's basically just a guided hunt. So if you're interested in any of that, you can look up kind of what we're doing at runningwaterhunting.com and then shoot us an email or a DM or a PM or whatever you want. And so, yeah, hopefully I didn't get too long-winded on that. I just wanted to cover that and kind of address some of the questions I've been getting. So moving on kind of to the Tipsy Tuesday side of it, new Rockslide article's up. Jared Blumgren has been doing a few Cryptek clothing reviews, and the cool thing about these ones are Jared has run Cryptek for a long time, so he's really familiar with the clothes, and he can comment on the durability over, you know, years, like, you know, a time span over years instead of just a few months, like really like a lot of the other articles that we do. Robbie and I were actually talking about that on the last hunt. The only thing, and we really try to disclose it all the time, is when we are reviewing, especially like a brand new product, we only have, you know, a month, 2 months, 3 months, maybe 3 months tops, 4 months tops to, you know, wear that piece of clothing or use that piece of gear and then comment to all of you what we thought of it. So we can't really comment on the durability after 2-3 years, you know, 2-3 seasons. We can't, right? So that's a really cool thing about those Cryptek articles. And then another one that Robbie did, that's same thing. He has a Seek Outside 8-man teepee. We stayed in that teepee on the hunt when I was there, and it's an 8-man. We had 3 of us in there with a stove, and there was plenty of room. As a rule of thumb, if they say 8-man, I mean, you could fit 8 people in there, but you're going to be shoulder to shoulder with them. But for 3 people and gear and the stove in there with firewood, it was comfortable, I thought. So he just hopped on and did a YouTube video review about that after he's had it now for, I think, 3 seasons he's used it, I believe. So I'll link to that in the description and shoot it right over to YouTube, and you can check that out. He can kind of comment on the durability and how it's been over the time he's had it. And then one cool thing going on right now is Hoffman Boots is a new Rockslide sponsor, and they are doing a giveaway for their 10-inch hunter boots. So it's kind of it's an interesting giveaway. Basically what they want to do is they want members to hop on and tell them what your dream boot would be, or some of the things that you would like to see in a boot. And basically they just have 4 questions. You answer those 4 questions and you're in for the drawing. And then the winner will just be randomly picked out of everybody who replied to that. So they just want to know if you like a 6, an 8, or a 10-inch boot boot height, if you like a boot insulated or non-insulated, waterproof or non-waterproof, and then just any added features that would make a boot better. So do that. I'll link to that. Just go over. If you're not a member of Rockslide yet, you should sign up, or at least go over and lurk for a little while and then sign up, because it's free. And then if you sign up, you can comment back and kind of get in on the conversation, as I like to say. And there's a ton of conversation on here. There's so much going on that site. Then kind of moving on, right in line with the articles, we have a bunch of rifle hunts coming up. I know Wyoming's rifle season for deer, at least, and some elk units opened up October 1st. There's big deer hitting the ground, and it's awesome to see, and I'm sure we're going to see a lot more elk stuff as it opens here, like the middle of the month. So one article I kind of dug up was Ross Russell did an article called Elk Hunting for Success. he goes through a bunch of things in that article that was pretty interesting. Go over and check that out. And then kind of some new products that we're trying. Pyro Putty just came on actually in the summer, I believe, or late spring of this last year. And Pyro Putty is basically a fire starter. That's just what it is. It's a fire starter. And it they have three different blends. They have a summer blend that's pliable from 40 to 110 degrees. And the winter blend, which is pliable from 20 to 70 degrees. And then they have a kind of an eco blend that stays pliable from 40 to 110 degrees. And they have a new thing I just saw coming up that they're actually going to make a home use style that's cinnamon scented. So if you have a wood stove at home, which we do, we're going to be getting some of that because sometimes it can be fun to start that thing. But some key features of it, it's waterproof, floating, and the size of a nickel will burn for 6 to 10 minutes, producing a 4 to 6 inch flame. And it's super easy to light. You know, it's a multi-fire fire starter. Build up to, you know, they claim build up to 30 fires with 1 2-ounce can. I believe the 2-ounce can is a bigger can. Robbie built, just on this last hunt, he just told me, I talked to him a couple days ago, and he said he built 10 fires and he didn't go through half of that can. So that 30 fires is probably pretty pretty realistic, and it's just super easy to light. Comes in like a little, I don't know if it's aluminum, but it's just a little can. I keep it in my bino harness along with a lighter, so it's pretty nice to use. And then they also came out with something that I really want to get. It's called the Dual Arc Lighter, and it's a rechargeable lighter, and just looks super awesome. It's fully waterproof, and it says up to 300 lights per charge. Then moving on, another kind of, you know, products that I haven't got one to try yet, but Kendall on this last hunt was wearing one, and they sell it over at blackovis.com, is a Gunfighters Inc. Kenyai chest holster. I don't know how to say that, sorry. The chest holster. So it's a chest holster. It has three straps, and he just has it underneath of his bino harness. So I've kind of been thinking about this. I'm a huge fan of the JC Custom Kydex because it goes on my backpack. It goes on like a Kafaru belt is basically what they're made for. They have the malice clips that clip through the PAL's webbing, and then you have a good holster that's always on your pack belt instead of trying to wear a pack with like a holster on your side belt or on your regular pants belt. But, you know, when Casey and I were doing the Grizzly Bear podcast earlier, like it was, I don't know, it's back. It was like the fourth or fifth episode that we ever did. He was talking about he really recommends a chest holster because then it's always with you. You know, if you take your backpack off, and I've done this before, you know, I think in my mind I'm going to be close enough to grab it. But, you know, there's times where I'll go, you know, drop my pack, and then I'm glassing next to it, which is all fine, but then I'll jump up with the binoculars and go walk out, you know, 50, 60 yards and look over the hill, and then I don't have my pistol with me. So, yeah, it just fits right underneath of a bino harness, and I tried it on, and it didn't seem obtrusive. It didn't really make the bino harness seem like it stuck out that much more. It wasn't uncomfortable, and yeah, so that's just one thing I wanted to kind of throw out there. And then news wise there wasn't a ton, but over on Go Hunt I saw they did an article of the CDC warns hunters about deer with tuberculosis. And my mom sent me a message this morning that said we needed to wear masks and full-length gloves when we mess with deer now, which isn't really that practical, mother, so we're probably not going to do that. But basically, it says a Michigan hunter was exposed to tuberculosis, which is a bacterial disease that affects the respiratory system after field dressing a deer. So, yeah, you basically just want to watch for that. There's, you know, some tips that, you know, what to look for when you're field dressing to see if that deer would have tuberculosis. So lymph nodes in the animal's head usually show infection. And as the disease progresses, lesions may begin to develop on the surface of the lungs and chest cavity. And then in severely infected deer, lesions can sometimes be found throughout the animal's entire body. That gives me the heebie-jeebies, really. And it says deer with severe tuberculosis may have tan or yellow lumps lining the chest wall and in the lung tissue. And deer showing this type of infection should be submitted to the, this says the Minnesota DNR, but it goes for anywhere. I'm pretty sure like 2-3 years ago, they were finding the same thing in Idaho because we were getting ready to go to Idaho for a whitetail hunt. And then these news articles started going out that had pictures of deer with the inside of their rib cages were like, yeah, they had those lesions and geez, nasty. So just be kind of cautious of that. I mean, if it doesn't look right, it might not be right. So you should probably go ask somebody about it. Then moving on to the hot minute, this is just going to be a pretty dang quick one, but meal hacks, like backcountry meal hacks. So when I was back with Robbie, he busts out a little container of salt and pepper, just like seasoning. I think it was just salt and pepper mixed together. I guess I don't know. I didn't ask. But it's just like a little bottle of seasoning, I guess. And he would just put that in all of his meals. And so I put some in mine and it actually like made a difference. It was a little bit, you know, different taste. I mean, there's enough salt in the mountain house anyways, but that little bit of seasoning was really nice. So you could put that into a little, I joke about my dime bags, I guess. I got on Amazon and got these little bags that are like 2-inch by 2-inch and they fit 4 AA batteries really well. They fit, you know, AAA batteries, just little things that you want to keep separate. They fit those in. So throw a little bit of seasoning in one of those and you can probably have it, you know, for a good week if you portion it out, which is really nice. But the big thing that Robbie did was he had instant potatoes, just like Idahoan instant potatoes, and he would throw them in with his mountain house. I don't know if he did it every night, but you know, if you get a little bit too much water in one and you want it thickened up a little bit, put some of the mashed potatoes in there, or it gives it a little bit different taste, which I really enjoyed after, you know, a few nights of that. So that's basically the hot minute, is just some that meal hack. Grab a bag of instant Idahoan potatoes. They're super cheap. Take them with you and you can just put a little bit. You could get a bag. If you didn't use that much, you could get one bag to last 5 days. I would almost, if you have room or if you want to pack more, you think you're going to eat more, I would almost portion out one bag for 3 days, probably. So that's basically the hot minute for today. This is going to be the last Tipsy Tuesday for until like the third week of November, I believe, or October, sorry, I believe. Next week, I'm headed out on the 13th to go with Ryan Avery on an elk hunt, and we're going to be in the backcountry out of service, so I'm going to miss next Tuesday for Tipsy Tuesday, but the following one, I should be back, and we'll be back on schedule. But hope everybody's having a great season. I know ours, Jordan and I started pretty slow, but things are really starting to pick up here in Nebraska. I think October is the magic month here for things kind of coming alive. And excited to get to Idaho, get on another elk hunt, and then get back here. And we have Kansas whitetail tags we're going to try to put a few days in on. I'm going to definitely try to take a rifle with me and on my way back from this other elk hunt, stop at my deer hunting spot and see if I can't get a deer shot. Hopefully they're still around. Robbie says they won't be far, so trying to do that. And then yeah, we'll have that. We'll have the elk hunting story, however it unfolds. It should be good because it's Ryan Avery and Jim Carr is who we're going with. So should be good. We'll have an episode kind of on how that goes down. And hope everybody is having a safe and good season. And we'll talk to you later.